termites have a long association with microbes, a long history of association with microbes. And some of these associations can be mutualistic. For example, many termites culture fungi actually to consume themselves. And also, as we just heard about, they have gut symbionts that they rely on for many things. But some of these relationships are not so beneficial. They can be pathogenic and not very good for the termite. So it's really important to understand the fungi that termites are associated with their environment. And one environment, soils, are very microbe-rich, and whether termites are foraging or a large portion of their nest is actually composed of soil, they come into contact with soils a lot. However, many more recently evolved termites have actually, it appears, evolved to kind of nest further away from these microbe-rich environments. And the species that I study is actually arboreal nesting. So it seems like possibly these termite species, one reason they might be moving away from the soil is try to avoid these pathogenic pressures. So it's been my interest to kind of investigate the fungi associated with termites to get a better understanding of this system. So my objectives were to assess the fungal communities within and surrounding N. acajulae nests in 5 habitats, to measure and identify which abiotic factors may be influencing any variation in these microbial communities, and to then identify these fungi that are associated with them in their natural habitat to possibly figure out which ones are mutualistic, pathogenic, or otherwise. So my study occurs on the island of St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands in the Caribbean. This particular study, the data that I'm presenting today, occurred this past summer, so 2008, in the month of July. And the nice thing about St. John is that it's very small. It's only about 8 miles across. And acajulae is the only arboreal nesting termite species on this island. And it occurs to varying degrees, but quite frequently in 5 different habitats. And just to kind of get a visual of what these habitats tend to look like, there's a wetland-woodland habitat, and it's a bit of a wetland, so crabs and other organisms kind of live in the soils. It's a little bit wetter. Then, for example, a sparse vegetation habitat occurs very often on the beach, and vegetation is very sparse. We also have mangroves, which can vary. The soil may be completely immersed in water or only partially immersed. Then we also have a dry forest habitat and a moist forest habitat in the higher elevations. And so the environmental measurements I took were internal and external temperature, and this means internal, so I actually cored into the nests and inserted data loggers, as you can see in these photos. And then the external temperature and humidity were taken with another data logger outside of the nest. We measured the elevations where the nests are located, how much light is getting to the nest volume, nest pH, and soil temperature and moisture. Just for today's talk, I'm going to be focusing on the temperature and moisture or humidity measurements. So the measurements I took, I collected 10 soldiers and 10 workers from each nest in 3 different locations. I collected core workers and soldiers, workers and soldiers from the trails of the nest. So on the right here, you can see the trails connecting to the nest that actually take the foragers to wherever they need to go. And I also collected workers and soldiers from surrounding the nest, actually foraging, whether directly on the soil or in decaying wood surrounding the nest. I also collected 0.25 grams of core material, nest material, and soil. These samples are centrifuged in a mild detergent or 2080 solution to remove the microbes. And then the supernatants are kept for later use. One of these uses is to plate on thiostreptin PDA, so I use the antibiotic thiostreptin in a 20 microgram per mil concentration. We put the samples on 2 plates. One is incubated at 25 degrees and one at 35 degrees Celsius for 5 days in order to kind of mimic the natural temperatures that we're seeing inside and outside of the nests. And after 5 days, the colony forming units are counted. So just to get an idea, this is an example of the kind of plates I would see from a termite. I actually saw very little to no growth of fungi on the termites. And just in comparison, this is the kind of thing I would get from the actual nest or soil samples. So you can already see a strong contrast between what the termites actually have on their cuticles to what they are actually foraging around in or have in their nests or on the surrounding soil. So after counting these CFUs, these graphs are from the termites themselves. I count on the y-axis, we have CFUs per gram. On the left side are 25 degrees Celsius, and on the right are the ones incubated at 35 degrees Celsius. And on the termites, there was so little growth that there really aren't any very significant differences. But you can at least see there is more growth at 25 degrees Celsius, which does make sense because most fungi actually prefer to grow at that temperature, and particularly pathogenic fungi do like to grow at that temperature. But you can see, at least in a couple of the habitats, the general trend is for the core to be the lowest, the trail to be the highest, and sometimes, at least, the soil does have the most fungal growth. To take a look at the nest and soil samples now, you can see that there is much more growth going on in these samples, particularly at 25 degrees Celsius. And even though not all environments show significant differences between core, trail, and soil, at least in the 25, 3 out of 5 habitats do show significant differences. But I would like to point out that the trend does hold for the core of the nest, where the termites spend lots of time, do have the lowest fungal communities. The trail tends to be the next highest, and soil varies a little. This may be due to my culturing technique, probably at least in the mangroves, since they are submerged in water, there may be a lot of anaerobic species that I am not successful at culturing with my technique. Now, as for the abiotic conditions, this is an example output from the data loggers that we use. On the top are ambient conditions, on the bottom are the inside of the nest, and you can see that at least so that box is showing kind of late afternoon to overnight, and you know, outside and inside the nest look pretty similar. But then during the day, you can see that the termites are maintaining the nest at a very nice, warm, cozy temperature and very high humidity, whereas outside it tends to switch a little. So the blue is the temperature and the red line is humidity. And during the day, it'll be, you know, hotter outside and very low humidity, but the termites are still keeping it pretty nice inside. So the termites are maintaining their internal nest conditions. And on the left is the temperature, and you can see that the cores of the nest are definitely being, on average, kept very much warmer than the outside, the trail, or the soil. And humidity is also much higher in the core. So what does this mean? Basically, in summary, what do I know so far? Overall, more fungal CFUs grew in the nest or soil samples as opposed to the termites themselves. So the termites, possibly through grooming and such, are actually keeping many fungi from lodging on their cuticles. The CFUs differ significantly between core, trail, and soil sample locations. And this has strong implications for their ability to control fungal pressures in their nest environment. And temperature and humidity vary significantly between these sample locations, so between the core, trail, and soil. Things that are in progress. So I have collaborators, John Stiller at East Carolina University and his student Erica, are working on environmental PCR of my samples using two different methods. So I've sent them plates, so the culturable organisms they can take samples from and do PCR. But we're also trying to get a picture of the entire microbial community, culturable and non-culturable species. So the hope is to actually identify all of these organisms, find out which ones are pathogenic and which are not, to really get a full picture of what the microbial communities are like. I am currently working on analysis of all the abiotic factors to find out which have the most influence on the microbial communities. And I've actually been going to St. John for several years. I have data from 2006 to currently that I would like to compare, because, for example, this year was the very first year that between habitats, so among habitats, all five, usually I've seen significant differences in the microbial communities, but this year there was a very large drought, and there weren't significant differences for the first time. So it'll be really interesting to see how the microbial communities vary based on the overall climate that is going on in St. John. And with that, I would like to thank the Earthwatch Institute and Durfee Foundation, which provided my funding. And this work has been done as part of a Student Challenge Awards program. So I'd like to thank all of my high school students that have helped with this work in the past and present. Thank you.